But right now, with the kind of successorship of the RPS lectures, now organized by the Kurat Center, so of course RPS is somehow short of money, stock market, I don't know. And today we have Roar Balatan here, who will give this free lecture course on UV and W blocks. And it's about topology, combinatorics, and low-time algebra.
Yes,
so exciting algebra. Of course, Roar is around until the end of this week, and certainly also available if anyone wants to discuss it with him. You find him in the Hilbert Raum or in the guest office next to Hörsaal 1.
Named after a celebrated mathematician, you should
talking about results, okay? And I more have problems than results, or dreams even more than problems. So the dream is that eventually I will want to achieve is to show that if you feed phenols, and I'll have to explain what these are, you get the ending of Kashdan theory of quantization of Levi algebras. Unfortunately, it's still a dream. I can't really talk about it. I'll vaguely mention it, but the results are still in the future. They're not here yet. Okay? And the other dream that I have is that, well, you see, in a way, what I'm describing is a machine that produces problems. The problems were known before in the cases that I'm talking about, in the U, V, and W cases. Okay? So one problem is this problem of associators, another problem is this problem about convolutions on Lie groups and Lie algebras, and another problem is quantization of Lie algebras. And all that I have is the machine that produces the problem. Okay? So the other dream is to show that knowing the question whose answer are these problems would be useful. So I have indications to show that this is the case, but through applications in algebra and topology, again, I have plans, reasons to think that through applications will eventually follow, but they're not here yet. So, you know, this is my apology in advance. A bit of this series of talks is about dreams rather than about results. Anyway, questions, comments? Okay. So, let's move on, and very quickly, the main characters. U-knots, this is usual knots. Here's a picture, now you know what they are. V-knots, I have to define more carefully, but very vaguely, they are knots drawn on a surface instead of just being drawn on a plane. So instead of being drawn on a plane or on a sphere, these are knots that are drawn on a surface. Modulo a little equivalence relation, which says that you can add or remove empty handles from the surface. So if you have a handle which is completely empty, you can remove it. Or likewise, you can add an empty handle. So that's V-knots. There is obviously a map from U-knots to V-knots. And you see later on I will show that U-knots are related to associators and V-knots are somewhat related to equivalence. So this will somehow stand behind the fact that these two algebraic theories are related to each other. And finally, W-knots. W-knots here are shown very schematically, but they are about tubes, two-dimensional tubes, knotted in R4. Okay, so a tube is a two-dimensional surface, and it's knotted in R4, and you know, in R4 things can cross in two ways. Either they pass by each other without interaction, or there is a certain way where they go through each other, and I'll explain it in a few minutes. So this is a schematic picture for what W-knots are. This said, let's move on and give the details. And also, I will tell you why all of these classes of knots are algebraic structures. They're not just a list of objects, they also have operations. Okay. So first of all, what are ordinary knots? So there is a celebrated theorem due to Rademeister, which says that every knot can be written by taking a number of crossings. So you take a number of crossings, and then you connect them with lines in the plane. So here is, you know, a typical knot. Modulo some relations, and the relations are that if you have a kink, so this is the so-called Rademeister 1 move, if you have a kink, you can undo it. Okay? And topologically, it's the fact that, you know, if you have a king projected, you can, right, you can see the projection, I guess, now. Then, if you pull it, you get topologically equivalent thing. Likewise, there is a Rademeister 2 move, which says that if you have two crossings connected to, run next to each other, and in some sense they are opposite, so here you go, you have two crossings, you can pull them apart, and topologically it's the same thing. And finally, there is the Rademeister 3 move, which says that if you have a crossing right here in the center, same over here, and you have an additional piece of a knot, of the knot, which goes under the crossing in the Z coordinate, but above it in the Y coordinate, you can slide it down in the Y coordinate so that it's below in the Y coordinate. Okay, and then the Rademeister theorem says that the topological thing called a knot, which I haven't even defined, is just the collection of all things you can draw using crossings connected in the plane modulo these relations. Now, where is the algebraic structure? So let me say it slightly differently. Knot theory is the planar algebra that has a single generator called the crossing, modded out by three relations. So what's a planar algebra? A planar algebra is a rather fancy, it's an algebraic structure. Okay? But unlike a group has one set of objects and two operations, multiplication and inversion. So a planar algebra has many sets of objects, one set of objects for each integer n, and in fact, in our case, it's each even integer n. So, you know, whenever you have some integer n, let's say the integer 6, you have objects that can fit inside the disk with n attachments to the outside. Okay, so one such object would be this one, but of course there are more. Okay? And then a planar algebra also has operations. There are many, many operations, unlike groups. Okay? But what parameterizes the operations? So if you have, say, a disk with two smaller disks removed, and then a number of hooks on each one, this one has four, this one has six, and then you have some planar way of connecting these hooks to each other and also possibly to the outside, then any planar picture like this is a no crossings, completely planar picture is a planar algebra operation. This one is an operation, so let's say the set of all such objects. Again, the objects don't need to be knots, but in this example, they are, okay? So let's call this set of objects P6, because these are objects with six links, six connections to the outside. So this operation, this planar algebra operation, will be an operation from P4 times, right? Because here you can fit something with four outputs, four connections, times P 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times P6 into P4. Right? So, okay? So when I say the free planar algebra generated by a single object, namely this object, what I mean is that you can take some number of copies of this object, it's exactly the picture that I drew before, connect them using the planar algebra operations, and then again mod out by these relations, and these relations are all written as planar connections of the generator, the only generator we have. Okay? Now, there is an additional subscript to this picture. So, nodes, and in fact, nodes and links. Links are just nodes with more than one component. But anyway, nodes are the part of the planar algebra that has zero legs. So node theory is somehow P0 of the planar algebra generated by one generator and modeled out by three relations written as here. But if you allow yourself to look at the hierarchies, you get what is called tangles. So a tangle is just a piece of a knot, much like the piece that we drew before, possibly this one. Okay? And tangles have lots of operations between them. The whole list of planar algebra operations. Okay? So, what are V-knots? V-knots are what you get from ordinary knots, so virtual knots, so-called V-knots, are what you get from ordinary knots if you think like an algebraist and remove some complexity. So you make things a bit simpler. So in other words, V-knots are just like U-knots, meaning they're generated by a single crossing and they're modeled out by, the Rademeister 1 relation is often ignored because topologically it's a bit sort of unusual, right? Because in fact, you know, if you take a kink and straighten it, it doesn't quite straighten because it's straightened to something with a twist. So to really straighten it, I have to twist my hand this way. So these twists are somehow topologically very simple, but on the other hand, it turns out that it's much nicer in many places to ignore them. So I actually did change the list of generator, the list of relations a bit by removing R1. But it's not a significant change. Okay? So essentially, it's the same generator, the same list of relations, and the only distinction is that instead of using a planar algebra, I use a circuit algebra. What's a circuit algebra? A circuit algebra is a planar algebra where you drop the word planar everywhere. Okay? So, in other words, instead of being very careful to have operations in which the connections are in the plane, they don't have to be in the plane. In fact, they're nowhere. They're abstract. I don't care where they are. Okay? So, you know, circuit algebras are quite natural. So, here is an element in a circuit algebra, the circuit algebra of electric circuits. And in fact, this particular element is a composition of smaller elements called cheeks. Okay? So here is one, and there are four more. I'm not sure if you can see this, but there is a bigger picture of a similar element over there. And in fact, if you remove the elements, if you remove the generators, what is left is the printed circuit board. Right? And the printed circuit board is an operation in the circuit algebra of electric circuits. Because what it does is, if you feed in to a printed circuit board a list of smaller elements, the output is a bigger element. And in fact, this particular element is a graphics card, and you can plug it in into an even bigger circuit. An even bigger circuit, I guess, called the motherboard of a computer, and get a functioning computer. Okay? But you see, when you do electronics, all you care about is which leg of which thing, of which chip is connected to which other leg of which other chip. It really doesn't care. So the actual connections, the physical connection, wires printed on the board, and in fact they are printed on both sides of the board, and in fact in many boards are also printed in the middle, and many times are made of layers. Okay? But you don't really care if a certain connection going from here to here is printed above or below the board. So if you have connections going this way on the top and going the other way on the bottom, who cares? It could have been the other way around. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. Okay? So, said differently, here is another circuit. This is a circuit. It's called the JK flip-flop, by the way, and it's a very basic memory cell. And it's a circuit that is made out of, what, 9 components. 1, 2, 3, 4 logical gates and 3 triple points. And you know, for me, the triple points are not a part of the circuit algebra, it's yet another component. Okay? And these triple points and these components are connected in a certain way as the wires indicate. And when you look at a book about electronics, they will not even bother to tell you whether the wire connecting here to here and the wire connecting here to here, they will not bother to tell you which way they're going. They could be going over or could be going under. I don't care. It's the same circuit. Okay? Okay, I've completely defined V-naughts. So V-naughts are the circuit algebra with one generator and 2 or 3 relations, depending what you choose. And in fact, if you only want to look at V-naughts and links, you have to restrict your attention to 0 legs. But it's kind of, this is just a part of the structure. Okay? And again, if you want a picture, so here is a virtual knot made out of 2 components. First of all, the components better be crossings, because that's the only generator I have. And then I tell you, connect this to this, so you connect. Then I tell you, connect this to this, so you connect. Then I tell you, connect this to this, so you connect. Then I tell you, connect this to this, so you connect, and who cares that you can't do it in the plane? Okay? It still makes sense to talk about this circuit, and it still makes sense to mod out by these relations. Okay. There is an alternative presentation for virtual knots, which is less nice. But I still want to describe it, because occasionally it is used. Namely, again, a circuit is an abstract thing. It doesn't happen in the plane. Right? It's just an abstract connection of components. But if you wish, you can project it to the plane. And if you project it to the plane, it's as if you've added yet another component, the so-called virtual crossing, in which one wire crosses to the other side of another, and I don't care if it crosses over or under. But then you also have to mod out by a few relations. And the relations will be the, first of all, the virtual Rademeister moves between these non-crossings. Okay? So, you know, as a circuit, this circuit is the same as that. You know, electrons don't care if they go straight or if they go like that. Okay? Likewise, this is the same circuit as the other one. This is the same circuit. Well, both sides here are the same circuits. And then there is also the Rademeister 2 and 3 of ordinary, so that connect these two. And finally, there is a detour move. The detour move says that if you have a link, basically, but the left hand side is equal to the right hand side. Let's say differently, if you have a component like here, if you have a chip somewhere, and you have a wire going from here to here, it doesn't matter if it goes above or if it makes a detour and goes below. Okay? By the way, so we're done with virtual knots. I've described virtual knots completely. Okay? By the way, here is a relation that is not true in virtual knots. So, The relation is this one. So you cannot slide a strand which has two real crossings from one side of a virtual crossing to the other. This is a bit counterintuitive if you think about it wrong. So if you think about it wrong, you think the virtual crossing doesn't exist. So who cares if black goes above it or below it? But that's the wrong way to think about it. The right way to think about it is to think the things that exist are the real crossings, and the real crossings are different here and here. Namely, if you walk along black, well, you first see blue and then red on the left. And if you want to walk along black on the right, you first see red and then blue. So from the perspective of the real crossings, these two circuits are different. So in virtual knots, this is not equal to this. Then what are W knots? W knots are what you get when you mod out virtual knots or virtual tangles by this additional relation. This relation is called overcrossings commute, because really, from the perspective of black, it goes over two things, and overcrossing commute means that it doesn't matter in which order you go over things. You can go over blue-red or over red-blue. So that's this relation is called overcrossings commute. There is a similar relation called undercrossings commute, in which black just goes under everything, and undercrossings commute is not imposed. So W knots are virtual knots, modulo OC, but not modulo UC.
UC doesn't follow.
What?
UC does not follow.
UC does not follow, and you do not mod out weight. Okay? Now, that sounds completely arbitrary until you start thinking about wings flying in R3. Should I risk myself and try that? Maybe not, okay? But, alternatively, you could be thinking about two-dimensional surfaces in R4. If you think of the fourth coordinate as time, then a two-dimensional tube in R4 would look like a ring flying in R3. Okay? So here is a two-dimensional surface in R4. Okay? Now, there is a map, an assignment, that assigns crossings or pictures in the plane to flying, to movies of rings in R3. Okay? So this map will assign the virtual crossing to the picture in which you have two rings and they just swap position. Okay? But we are in R3, so they could swap position this way, or they could swap position this way, or they could swap position that way. And there is a whole circle work of ways to swap position. Basically, you have to decide what is the vector going between the two in the center of the swap. Okay? And since the circle is connected, it means that topologically, well, this way of swapping can be continuously deformed to that way of swapping. So, the swap of two, so the movie in which two flying wings fly position, switch positions, is independent of, you don't need to specify over or under, you just need to specify the two things swapped. Okay? But?
Because
everything is up to topology, so I mean, everything is topological. The technical word is as okay. Yes. Now, but there is another way in which two rings can swap positions. Meaning, namely, well, one could go through the other and then come out on the other side. And now there is a distinction between the outer and the inner. So my convention is that the outer is drawn over the inner. Okay? consciousness have, is hidden by the other in our form, in the fourth dimension. So there are other ways of drawing this, but the basic point is what I said. How am I doing, by the way? Okay, so I think I'll skip the formal definition and the other formal way of seeing it and just tell you what are the relations. Okay? So what are the relations between flying rings? So first of all, I need a volunteer. Need somebody help me? I need to hold three gloves. You should stand here. Stand next to me. Okay. So first of all, you know, if I wanted, let's say that you're stationary, okay? If I wanted to switch these two, okay, you know, I could switch them and then, sorry, what do I do? Sorry. I could switch this one with that one, then this one with that one, and then this one with that one, or do it in any other way, and this just says that the virtual crossings are invariant under everything. Okay? There is also a Rademeister 2 move, meaning I can switch and then switch back. And that's the Rademeister 2 move. There is also a Rademeister 3 move, meaning suppose I have three rings, one big, one small, one intermediate, and I wanted to swap them all together, okay? So it's clear that I could first let the small one go through the middle one, and then let this one go through and that one go through. Or I could let this one go through and then that one go through and then swap these two. And it's clear that you could continuously connect one way of doing it to the other. And that's the Rademeister 3 move. Let me just show you what overcrossings commute is. So overcrossings commute is about one is over, so one is big, and I have two small ones. So overcrossings commute means that I can swap these two virtually and then let them go through big, or I can let them go through big and then swap them virtually. And that's clearly topologically the same because I could just have them swap virtually while they are inside big. That's sort of the intermediate step. However, it is not listed here. However, undercrossings commute does not, so sorry, but now I have to hold the two big ones. So undercrossings commute does not hold. Because undercrossings commute would mean that you have a smaller one and it has to go under one and then under the other. And think about it a little bit, and it's simply not true that this is topologically the same as going through the other and then through the first. Okay? So, thank you. So in fact, the funny thing shown here, meaning the circuit algebra of tangles, modulo Rademeister 2 and 3 moves, and overcrossings commute, has a topological means. And this is the end of the first chapter of my talk.
Question. And this is that we have this topological meaning that we like this particular relations, or we like it much less. But anyway, are you happy to tell us this yourself?
So, you know, I'm going to describe in a minute a machine that takes an algebraic structure to a problem in graded algebra. Now, if you give me a problem in graded algebra, you could ask yourself, is it in the image of this machine? Okay? And for many problems in graded algebra, I know the answer, and it is in the image. For other problems in graded algebra, I don't know the answer. Okay? But then you could ask two questions. First of all, is there some algebraic structure for which the machine will produce the problem you started from? And then you could ask yourself, is this algebraic structure describing something pretty? Okay? So really you're asking me,
you know, where do I divide the beauty? Where do I put more weight? Okay. So I think the answer is, you know, if the problem is this ethnic-Pashtun problem of quantization of feedback algebras, first of all, I would be happy to know that it's the output via my machine, or not my machine, via this machine, of some algebraic structure. And then I would be even happier if it's something pretty. Okay? Anyway, in the case of the Kashiwa-Wern problem, you know, I win in both cases. So it's the output of it's W knots with the machine applied to them, and W knots are pretty. So, you know, I'm just happy. Anyway, so let me tell you about the machine in general. Okay? And for now, you have to forget completely about knots. Now it's completely algebra. So first of all, what's an algebraic structure? It's something that has spaces, and then it has operations between the spaces. So, you know, you might have an operation called psi 1, taking objects of type 1 to objects of type 2, and you might have a binary operation called psi 2, taking objects of type 1 and objects of type 2, and producing an object of type 3. Okay? And maybe there are some axioms that say that some compositions are always the same. Think about a group, for example. And in fact, you know, this was a unary operation, this was a binary operation, there can be trinary operations as well, and in fact there can be even nullary operations, so zero-nary operations, operations that take no input and produce an output. Such operations are normally called constants. So, you know, in a group, a nullary operation is the identity. Okay? So here I have one constant and here I have another constant. Okay? And the axioms can be written in terms of these constants as well. Okay? So I've defined an algebraic structure in general. And now let me tell you about the machine. So suppose you have a filtered algebraic structure. What's a filtered algebraic structure? It's a structure K that has some operations on it, and then a sequence of substructures, a decreasing sequence of substructures in it, which are closed under the operations, right? That's what it means to be a substructure. Okay? So that's a filtration on an algebraic structure. Whenever you have, oh, sorry, and let me assume that the algebraic structure also have an addition, that each space of objects is an abelian group or a Z module. So you can add objects. Okay? And, you know, if your structure didn't start that way, you make it be that way. So, for example, knots, you can a priori add knots. So you just allow yourself to take arbitrary formal linear combinations of knots, and now knots also have an additive structure. Okay? So when I say a substructure, I also mean a submodule. Okay? Now, whenever you have a filtered thing, it has an associated graded, and the associated graded is, well, you take the first one and you mod it out by the second. The zeroth one and you mod it out by the first. And then you add to it the first mod it out by the second. And then you add to it the second mod it out by the third, and so on. That's the associated grade. And you can check that if you have a filtered structure, then operations, then you get operations induced on the associated grade, the GER of the original structure. Okay? And also, you know, if you do a little bit of dimension count, assuming everything is finite, it doesn't have to be finite, but assuming everything is finite, you do a little bit of dimension count, when you see here that you've modeled out by K1, but then you've added K1. You've modeled out by K2, but then you've added K2. You've modeled out by K3, but then you've added K3. And then by sort of telescopic summation, formally, you find that Gürke is of the same dimension or the same size in some sense as K. However, they are not canonically isomorphic. An expansion is a choice of an isomorphism. So an expansion for a general algebraic structure would be, well, given this algebraic structure, there is another structure which has the exact same shape called the Gür of O, and an expansion will have O1 into Gür of O1, O3 into Gür of O3, and so on. But I want another condition from the expansion, and the condition is the following. So, you see, the associated gradient is also filtered. It's filtered by, well, the degree 2 power of the filtration will be the direct sum starting from K2 mod coil K3 and adding all the rest, but ignoring everything before. So this is clearly a decreasing filtration because the degree 3 thing, the degree 3 sum is contained in the degree 2 sum. Okay? Now, Gür is a functor. You can check that if you have a filtered map between two filtered objects, then its Gür is a map between their associated gradients. So what I want Z to be is I want it to respect the filtration, so it should map K2 into the sum of everything that follows. That's what it means to be filtration respecting. And I want that Gür of Z will go from Gür of K into Gür of K, but Gür of K is Gür of K. So Gür of Z will go from Gür K to Gür K, and I want it to be the identity. So that's sort of what it means, so that's an expansion. Now, in addition, you have operations on K and operation on Gür of K. A homomorphic expansion is an expansion that intertwines these operations. But notice that the phrase a homomorphic expansion... Oh, sorry, not yet. Let me continue. Sorry. Maybe before continuing, here's a nice... So the whole thing is a bit abstract. And I want to give you a concrete realization, even though it has nothing to do with knot theory. Okay, so here is the prettiest example that I know for the picture described above. Okay? So the space K is the space of all two-dimensional projections of reality. Okay? Otherwise known as pictures. So it's the set of all pictures. And I took a typical picture as an example. Okay? Now, really the way I want to think of this picture as being a very, very, very large linear combination of atoms. And each atom, so you know, the order of 10 to the 30, I don't know how many atoms the original here is made of, okay? Probably less, because only the visible ones I care about, okay? So, but anyway, lots of atoms, and each one emits a certain amount of light. So really, this thing here is a huge linear combination of things with time luminosity, each one, okay? Now, I want to remind you, sort of before going into the details, I want to remind you about something that used to be with computers. So it used to be that when you download, so that when you view the website far away or over a modem, and the pictures would progressively appear, okay? Somehow they would first appear at low resolution and then at a higher and higher resolution as you wait longer and longer. Nowadays, internet connections are faster, so you hardly ever notice it. But in principle, it's still true, okay? So what's the mathematical parallel of that? Well, you define a decreasing filtration on K, on the set of realities. So K1 is, you declare everything to be equivalent. happens to be equivalent. K2, you declare all atoms that fit inside this box, or that box, or that box, or that box. So two atoms that are in the same box are declared to be equivalent. And so on for K3 and K4 and so on. Okay? Now, if you think that, say, K module K3, well, you have only one brightest level for each square, because all atoms were made equivalent. So K mod K3 represents picture of this kind. And K module K6 would represent pictures like that, and there is a map from K into K mod K6, which, and if you start from this element, this is the image of that map. Okay? Now, what is it that you need to transmit in the K step, let's say in the third step of this progressive scan procedure? Well, you need to transmit the information in the fourth step that you haven't yet transmitted, meaning that information that maps to zero in the third step, whose image in the third step would have been zero. Okay? So you need to transmit the information in the kernel of K mod of this map. And you can do a little bit of vector space arithmetic to find that this kernel is isomorphic to K3 mod K4. It's one of the isomorphism problems, okay? So what is being transmitted is an element in K mod K1, direct sum. So, you know, first pass will transmit something here. Second pass will transmit second something here. Third pass will transmit something here, and so on. But then you have to decide how to transmit it. To decide how to transmit something is precisely to decide on a map going from K to here, and you can check that it should be filtration respected. Now, such a map is far from unique, because suppose, say, you've already transmitted the information here, so you've transmitted the brightest level in this square. Now you need to transmit the four subsquares, but you don't want to repeat transmission, so you just need to transmit three of them, and you need to choose which three to transmit. That's the choice of an expansion. It's the choice of a progressive scan algorithm. But of course, you don't necessarily have to transmit three of the brightness level, omitting the four. It's true that if you have the three and the average, you can recover the fourth. However, it's numerically unstable, so it's usually more beneficial to transmit the difference between this and that, and the difference to transmit three differences. Okay? And in fact, there are many progressive scan algorithms, and you can, and I think you have introduced the problem. Now, in addition, you know, pictures have operations acting on them. So, for example, you can rotate the picture 90 degrees counterclockwise. Okay? Likewise, this induces a rotation operation on Z spaces, and you could ask to find an expansion which is compatible with these operations. Now, let's go back to knot theory. So, the image you should have in mind is that you want to study knot theory progressively. In day one, you want to view it very coarsely. In day two, you want to have a finer image. In day three, you'll have an even finer image. So as you progress in time, you'll see a better and better picture of knot theory, or of the algebraic structure that you are studying. And you want, and clearly this might have benefits. Okay, I mean, whenever you study something, it's always good to know what to forget. So it's always good to know that you can, you can study something finite. In the case of knot theory, it will turn out to be finite. So you can study something finite on day five, ignoring the infinite amount of further information that will appear in the future. Okay? But you see, sometimes knots are related to each other, and you want to somehow retain these relationships. If you want to study problems in your theory, you want, again, you want to study them already in day five. So you want exactly a homomorphic expansion. Details to follow. Anyway, if you think that filtered algebraic structures are rare, they are in fact cheap and exist. There are many, 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 many of them. In fact, any algebraic structure has a natural filtration on it. Comes automatic with a filtration. Okay? So you just need to specify the algebraic structure, otherwise you don't need to specify anything else. So in any algebraic structure, first of all, you allow formal linear combinations, and then you set K1 to be the so-called augmentation ideal. So these are the linear combinations in which the sum of the coefficients is equal to zero. Okay? And then you let Km to be K1 raised to the power m. So back to the picture, K1 would be a difference of two elements here, for example, or any combination of differences, so any sum of elements here or here in which the sum of the coefficients is equal to zero. An element of K2 you will get by taking an element in K1 here, an element in K1 here, multiplying the two, so now you have two K1s, so you get in K2 here. And this particular algebraic structure, you don't have much more that you can do, but if you have many more operations, you could look, so Km would be the set of all things that you get by applying m operations to, by applying operations to m elements in K1. And plus other, you can actually also use constants, or so you can also take elements of K0, but you have to have at least m inputs in K1. Okay? So that's the ideal, and it always exists. Okay? And
how many have to have inputs? You have to have things which are combined or multiplied.
Yes. Otherwise it's sort of not interesting. You have to have a binary operation somewhere so that you can combine two things. Otherwise the theory is empty. Okay? But you see the algebraic structures that I told you about, planar algebras and circuit algebras not only have binary operations, they have n-ary operations for every n. So the printed circuit board here is probably a 15-ary operator, because it takes about 15 components, the chips and also a transistor here and a capacitor somewhere, you know. It takes many inputs and produces an output. Okay. So I don't think I have the time to go through the details. I'll only mention them. So first of all, if you start from a group and perform this process to it, so I call this process projectivization. So first of all, you allow formal linear combinations. In the case of a group, it's called a group ring. Okay? Then you look at the augmentation ideal. In the case of a group, it's just called it's the augmentation ideal. Then you look at powers of the augmentation ideals, and you look at the direct sum of augmentation to the n divided by the augmentation to the n plus 1. In the case of a group, you'll always get a graded associative algebra. Because the group operation induces an operation on this associated graded, and you can check that this operation is automatically associative. This follows from the associativity of the group. But there are also more fun examples, even if you restrict to the kind of simplest algebraic structure you can have, which is one set and a binary operation. Two inputs, one output. Okay? So even in this simplest case, there are other algebraic structures to consider. And one of them is called a quandl. So I'm actually slightly cheating about the definition of a quandl. I'm removing one axiom, which is relevant. Okay? But a quandl, more precisely a unital quandl, is in a set queue with an operation wedge, and in fact also a unary operation, sorry, a nullary operation called 1, with the property that 1 wedge x, or 1 up x is 1, and x up 1 is x for any x. And also this self-distributivity axiom, which is the most exciting property of a quantum. And it's the property that x up y up z is x up z up y up z. Okay? And if you want a way to memorize it, here is a way to memorize it. It's exactly associativity. So, you know, when you were in grade 3 or something, they taught you about associativity, and associativity reads something like A plus B times C is equal to A times C plus B times C. So take associativity and replace. Sorry, it's called distributivity. I skipped grade 3. That's actually true. So you apply, replace both operations by up. So you do up here and up here and up here and up here and up here. That's self-distributivity. Did I say self-associativity before? Sorry. I mean self-distributivity. If you want an example of a quantum, well, every group is also a quantum. Namely, you can define, if you have a group, you can define x up y to be x conjugated by y. So y inverse x y. Okay? And then you can check that these axioms are satisfied. And in fact, but you see, this is not the only way to get a quantum. For example, even given a group, you can alternatively define x up y to be y to the minus 5 x y to the 5, and that's again a quantum. So there are more quantums than groups. Okay? And then the statement is that proj q will have an operation on it, a binary operation on it as well. And the statement is that proj q will be a so-called Leibniz algebra. What's a Leibniz algebra? A Leibniz algebra is like a Lie algebra, sorry, a graded Leibniz algebra. So it's like a Lie algebra, except drop-down asymmetry axiom. So retain Jacobi, but drop anti-symmetry. And well, here is the proof in 2 lines, but I don't want to go through it. So here is the Leibniz identity, again, the Jacobi identity, simply with, except with careful designs and without assuming anti-symmetry. Okay, and you can check. Okay, now I am nearly out of time and also nearly out of things to say. So let me sketch the next lecture. Okay? So far I told you that given any algebraic structure, and I told you about three structures that I care about, U-knots, V-knots, and W-knots. So given any algebraic structure, you automatically get a graded structure called prod of K, or also called A. Okay? K in general will be topology for us. So K will be various kinds of non-theory. Proj K will turn out to be completely combinatorial. Basically, if you look at knot theory on day 5 and ignore everything that happens later on, what remains is simply combinatorics, finite combinatorics. Okay? So, this will be a combinatorial space. Well, topology I already talked about, and combinatorics will come tomorrow. Now, there is always the question of, is there a homomorphic expansion going from here to here? This question, so does Z exist, is what I will call high algebra. And I will explain why is it called high algebra only after explaining what's low algebra. Okay?
it turns out that the combinatorics that occur here, that occurs here, is always a bit graph theoretic. Okay? So there are always some graphs, diagrams, modulo some relations between diagrams. But you see, graphs always represent formulas. Not always, sorry. Formulas can always be thought of as representing, being represented by graphs. So, you know, if you have a formula like, if you've ever worked with computer algebra systems, formulas are just graphs. Right? So if you have a formula like sine squared of x plus cosine squared of x, this is the graph whose vertex is plus, and then on the left it has a vertex called power, which on the left has a vertex called sine, and on the right has a vertex called 2, and sine has a sum called x, and likewise here you have power, and here you have cosine, and here you have 2, and here you have x. That's this. But you see, you must know that this is equal to 1. So this graph is equal to the graph 1. Root connected to 1. So formulas are graphs modulo relations. In the same way, the diagrams, the combinatorics that will occur here, if we start from no theory, will be the combinatorics of formulas written in an arbitrary algebra or Lie algebraic object. So if you choose a Lie algebra, you'll get a map from the formulas to their values. Okay? And the values will typically be in the universal enveloping algebra of the Lie algebra you started from. Okay? So this is what I will call low algebra, because it's actually very, very simple. It's as simple as the picture drawn here, except done in Lie algebras. Okay? And now I can tell you about high algebra. What does it take to find a homomorphic expansion? Well, all structures that I will work with are finitely generated, in fact, finitely presented. In fact, I have given to you as generators and relations. If you want to find a homomorphic expansion, it's enough to figure out what the image of the generators are, but you have to find such images for the generators that satisfy the relations. So you have unknown elements here, the images of the generators, and they have to satisfy equations. So you have to solve a problem over here. And why do I call it high algebra? Because when you push this problem to the Lie world, it becomes all these high algebra problems. The problem of finding dreadful associators, or in the UK, or the problem of proving the Kashiwara-Wern conjecture of Kashiwara-Wern and theorem of Alexei and Neyman, kind of thing. But anyway, if you start from W naughts here, you get a problem in combinatorics here, which can get pushed by low algebra to be a very high algebra problem. And likewise for, hopefully, for V naughts. And I always end my talks with propaganda. So, that's it. Thank you.
Bothered by the video, we can turn it.